Welcome to another episode of Routes Through Pokemon Adventures. I'm co-host Shaylock.
And I'm Ruby.
And together we are a father-daughter team that is journeying through the mainline Pokemon series, the Pokemon anime, and the Pokemon Adventures manga. And this week we'll be covering the first half of the last volume of the manga, Volume 7. And these are Chapters 79, Airing Out Aerodactyl, Chapter 80, Dragon in Dragonair, Chapter 81, Aerodactyl Redux, Chapter 82, Eradicate Raticate, Chapter 83, Bang the Drum Slowbro, and Chapter 84, Clefabulous Clefable. And then we will be covering 4 episodes of the anime. We'll have these 4 episodes and then 4 more episodes next week to finish off the whole Orange Islands arc. And here we get to finally reach the goal of the Orange League competition. But these episodes are The Wacky Watcher, Stun Spore Detour, Hello Pomelo, and Enter the Dragonite. But before we get started, let's catch up on what's been going on so far in our own Pokemon journeys outside of the game. So, I know Ruby and I and the family have recently started watching episodes in the second batch of 12 for Pokemon Horizons, having finished the other 12. And they got us all excited to go to the Galar region, and so far 2 episodes in, they still haven't left for the Galar region. But there's been some really fun stuff. I really liked this new revelation of this villain with his Umbreon and what he's been up to, and outsmarting the crew of the, what is that ship called? The Brave
Olivine.
The Brave Olivine. And just the increasing interactions between the crew, especially with Dot, who remains very reclusive, and getting to know Gramps Ludlow a little bit more. Still kind of a mystery. And we also had Roy catch a new Pokemon, and that whole journey was very, really exciting and a lot of fun.
That was fun. I was like, he needs to catch that Pokemon. He can't just leave.
Right? Oh, yeah, and then in Pokemon Go, we have a whole Master Ball, Masterwork research that we're all striving towards. I mean, I'm striving towards. Others are doing it when they feel like it. I have already reached leg 3 out of the 4, so I've been really plowing away, getting really low on Pokeballs, though, because there's a lot of catching to do. But that's fun. I always like getting more Master Balls. Oh, and Vivi caught himself a Galarian Moltres recently, so out of 3 of us that play Pokemon Go, we now have one of each of the 3 legendary birds from Galar, so that's actually kind of fun.
Yeah.
We need more so we can, you know, maybe trade and get them better star levels or something. But still, it's just really fun that we have the Moltres and Articuno and Zapdos, and actually what's really funny to me about it all is we all caught the ones we would want. Well, like, at least for as far as the original 3 birds are, which one would I want? I would want the electric bird over the ice bird or the fire bird. What would Vivi want? The fire bird. And what would you want? The ice bird, obviously.
I feel like with the Galarian forms, though, Moltres and Articuno. Articuno? I don't know what did I say?
Articuno?
Articuno. I don't know which one of those two are my favorite, but I'm okay with Articuno because she's beautiful.
Yeah, and my first reaction to Zapdos when I saw it was, like, I was not necessarily a fan because I was just so used to the classic version, but like over time I've actually really warmed up to the idea, especially since it kind of reminds me of a chocobo from the Final Fantasy series. Basically it's just a big ostrich thing, but I don't know, the coloring on it's cool. And I was also really annoyed with all 3 birds when I learned that they don't have the types that they're supposed to have at all, like that's not part of their types. But then the descriptions for the moves that they do and how that gives them their name of, like, a lightning theme or an ice theme or a fire theme, it changed my mind around on it. So it's actually pretty cool to me. Still, Zapdos is probably still my least favorite as far as typing goes, because fighting type is just not one that I'm that interested in normally.
Yeah.
But I like the look of it. So yeah, that's Pokemon Go. That's our anime journey so far. I know we're wrapping up the current season of Pokemon Go soon and jumping into another, so I know it's called Shared Skies or something, so I like the idea of skies and flying, so I don't know. I don't know what to necessarily expect. I think it has a lot to do with some I forget what the Ultra Beast or something, which I really don't know much about because I think that comes from like Sun and Moon maybe, but I don't really know anything about them except that I know we've had them show up sometimes in Pokemon Go. And they're kind of like Pokemon, but not exactly like Pokemon or something. I don't know. They count for a Pokedex, I believe. So, whatever. All right. So, yeah, I think that's all we got for that stuff. So, we can start diving into these chapters of the Pokemon manga. Fair warning before we get too far. We had a spoiler warning for the end of Volume 6. And if you haven't guessed from our own discussion or extrapolated other information based off the revelation from Volume 6, this first half of Volume 7 definitely digs even deeper and explains Green's interactions with Yellow and how Yellow got involved in all this. And so if you want to discover that for yourself, skip over the manga portion and just go join the anime side. Or just, you know, stop listening, period, and go read it and then come back.
We find out who Yellow really is.
Correct. So, Manga Volume 7, Chapter 79, Airing Out Aerodactyl. So, we see while protecting Cerulean City from Haunters, Misty is talking with Erica, who is dealing with the Shelders in Celadon City, which we've seen a while ago that they're all being attacked in these cities.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we already learned that they were all attacking the cities, and I think we got wind that they were starting to suspect that there might be some other purpose than just trying to destroy the cities.
Yeah.
But here we get confirmation that they are definitely looking for something, and what they're actually looking for is...
the badges!
Yeah, they're trying to steal all the gym leader badges. So, we then see Haunter steal the Cascade badge, while Misty tries to stop it. And then the Shelter gets Erica's badge as well. So, they succeeded at least stealing a couple of the badges that they were looking for. And then we cut to Yellow and Blaine in that area with that magic mirror rock wall thing. And that area had been flooded, which is when Yellow got her hat knocked off. Mm. And so Yellow's long ponytail is free, and the hat's on the ground. Blaine tries to ask about Yellow, but she tells him not to ask right now. So we don't even get really confirmed that Yellow is a girl, really, but, I mean, she looks very much like a girl, so.
And then she quickly stuffs her hair back in her.
Yep. And then she also realizes that Red's Pokedex and her sketchbook are missing and must have fallen out when Yellow and Blaine were washed away by the flood. It gets darker as the pair venture further into the caves, and Blaine brings out Growlithe to light a torch. Then a voice laughs and says the cities are already falling, and that then they'll level the other cities as well, and then the world will be as the Elite Four want it. Yellow sends out Pika to light up the whole place, revealing Lance. Yellow is going to take him on, but Blaine cuts in and wants Yellow to watch the way Lance battles while Blaine tests his strength. He charges in, grabbing the Master Ball, and Lance has his Aerodactyl send a Hyper Beam at Blaine. But Mewtwo pops out and catches the Hyper Beam. This impresses Lance, and he realizes he is probably dealing with Mewtwo, which he deems the result of arrogant human experimentation. Which is not necessarily wrong about that. Anyway, then he causes rocks to fall in around them from the ceiling, opening up the cavern into the night air. Lance stands on his Aerodactyl as it flies around, which seems like maybe not the position one would take if they truly cared about Pokemon being free from human influence. Like, he's using Aerodactyl as a floating platform. Yeah. That seems very...
abusive?
Not even necessarily abusive, but just... he's using it, you know what I mean? Like, for a show when he could just stand somewhere.
Yeah.
It gives off the impression of some kind of, you know, arrogance or something.
There's a lot wrong with the Elite Four. Let's just say that.
Especially Lance, I think.
Yeah.
So Lance has Aerodactyl use Supersonic and Mewtwo uses Barrier. Blaine explains that everything is okay as the blast is constantly hitting the barrier. He wants Yellow to watch for strengths and weaknesses in Lance, but... it seems Blaine's hands are trembling and his body might be giving out. And then we move on to Chapter 80, Dragon In, Dragon Air. As the blast continues and the barrier holds up, Blaine has Mewtwo levitate all three of them into the air toward Lance and bash into Aerodactyl. So, kind of like with the movie, too, right? Glowy orb, smack into things.
Yeah. But then Lance falls off, and this is why you don't ride your Pokemon that you're using to battle.
Yeah. Lance was surprised, and he's upset by this development. Yeah. He lands and throws out more Pokemon and uses a phrase that almost sounds like something Storm of the X-Men would say. Call upon the winds! Call upon the thunderclouds! And then we get two Dragon Air showing up, which we've learned that they mess with weather. Lance commands them to use agility, and they shoot by, hitting at Mewtwo's barrier, and a rushing wind seems to follow one, while lightning and thunder follows the other. So they're both doing different things with the air and weather. Yeah. Yellow even mentions that the pair seem like gods of the storm. Blaine explains that it is said Dragonair can control the weather, so he confirms that stuff that we've been talking about. But these two are combining their abilities, so it's time to go into attack mode, which requires losing some of the barrier. Yellow agrees and seems to be riding on Mewtwo's shoulder, which I thought was interesting. Instead of a Pokemon riding on a person's shoulder, it's the other way around. Lance taunts them over letting down the barrier and sends the Dragonair to attack. But then Mewtwo creates a tornado, putting them all in a kind of weather war. And then Mewtwo unleashes Psywave. It knocks the Dragonair off course and they get sucked into the whirlwind. But then they just work together and roll out an attack. And they roll out by, like, turning into a wheel together, basically.
Yeah, because they were already basically connected, but now they're just a wheel.
Yeah. Mewtwo catches Blaine in Yellow, and Lance sends Aerodactyl to take them down with its razor-sharp wings. Mewtwo defends with its psychic spoon weapon, and so it clangs against the wings of the Aerodactyl, making it seem like the razor wings are then metallic in nature.
I think it's funny how they make how the psychic spoon for Pokemon or whatever, so cool, psychic spoon, when it's like meant to be funny or whatever.
Yeah, it's really kind of interesting. He's this giant spoon. Yellow is concerned for Blaine because they are so close to the combat, but Blaine has to be, and he explains again how he used his own DNA to help with Mewtwo's creation. And when I say explains again, he explains for all of us. Yellow never got the explanation. He explained that to Red in Volume 3.
Yeah.
But he adds in some more information this time around, because he also says, he mentions that he also added some of Mewtwo's cells to himself, which actually explains even better how they're linked.
Yeah, that makes a lot more sense.
But because of that link, he needs to be close to issue forth the commands, because it's what allows him to command Mewtwo, but he needs to stay close to him.
And it shows Mewtwo in a tank when he was in a tank, and it has just a little do not disturb sign on it.
Yeah. Yeah, he goes into it further, saying Mewtwo apparently needs to be kept in that liquid all the time, except for when he's released for battle for a little while, which is why he's in where it shows him in that tank. And he even mentions that he put liquid in Mewtwo's Pokeball, which is what keeps him safe while they're traveling. But having him out is hard on Mewtwo's body, and therefore it's also hard on Blaine's body. And he says the degeneration was only up to his elbows 2 years ago, but now it's up to his shoulders. The plan is then to go for Lance's Pokeballs of the Pokemon he hasn't used yet and break the button so he can't get them out, because I've already exhausted the ones he has out, right?
Yeah.
So this way they won't have to worry about the rest of his team. We see a picture, and it looks like all of Lance's balls are Ultra Balls, which is later confirmed, I think, in the next chapter. He mentions them. Anyway, Mewtwo is going to go for them with his Psychic Spoon while Yellow takes on Aerodactyl. And then we start Chapter 81. Aerodactyl Redux. Lance catches on to what they're up to as Mewtwo goes for the Pokeballs. Yellow is worried because Blaine told her that Mewtwo can only be out fighting for about 3 minutes, and more than 2 minutes have already gone by. Mewtwo and Blaine succeed and pass out, and Lance is laying face down on the ground. So the Pokeballs were broken, and Mewtwo and Blaine exhausted themselves with those 3 minutes and fell, and Lance has also been knocked down. Yellow counts down the last seconds and is sure it has been more than 3 minutes, but they did succeed. But then, Lance gets back up. He discards his torn cape and laughs. He acknowledges Mewtwo's power, since it was even able to damage the Ultra Balls this badly. But in the end, they had put all that effort into a fruitless endeavor. He admits that having his Pokemon trapped would be an issue, since his Dragonairs and Aerodactyl had used a ton of energy. But then he has Aerodactyl open up the Pokeballs and reveal that they're all empty. And when I say open up, he cuts them open.
Yeah.
Turns out he had those Pokemon released and go underground way earlier, and now they emerge, and Lance stands with his entire dragon force. His two Dragonair, his Dragonite, his Gyarados, who's not actually a dragon type, and his Aerodactyl, who's also not technically a dragon type.
They just seem dragon-esque.
For sure. But there's no Horsea or Seadra, and they actually are called the dragon Pokemon.
If I saw a Horsea in his dragon fleet, I'd be like, okay.
What, you don't like Horsea?
No, I love Horsea. But it doesn't seem Lance.
It does not seem Lance. Which is also emphasized a little later on when Yellow brings her Pokemon out. Yeah, he has all these things, and he looks like he's going to be quite a handful still. Mewtwo suddenly shows up with the spoon, but Lance warns Mewtwo that continued battling will harm Blaine because they're connected. So then Mewtwo returns to his Pokeball. Yellow isn't going to give up, of course, and so she steps forward thinking that Blaine and Mewtwo still gave them a chance by weakening the Dragonair and Aerodactyl. Then she brings out her friends. And not her Pokemon, right? They're her friends.
Yeah.
And they don't bring forth the same sort of intimidating energy that Lance's Pokemon seem to do.
There's even a picture of Lance standing on his Gyarados with his Pokemon all flying behind him. And Gyarados just leaning over. And then she's standing down there with the duo taller than her. And the rest of them are all like to her knees at the most.
Yeah, they're all smaller Pokemon. Even Doduo, while being bigger than her, is still smallish compared to Lance's Pokemon. And yeah, we have Doduo, Ammonite, Golem, Caterpie, Raticate, and Pikachu, which are, what, Doty, Omni, what's Golem's name? I don't remember. Kitty, Ratty, and Pika.
I wonder if it says back.
It might. I don't remember Golem's name, though.
It just says Golem.
Maybe it is. Maybe it's just Golem. Lance can't believe that this is the team Yellow is going to use, and then he has a line that suggests none of them have been evolved, but I had to wonder if that was a mistranslation, because Raticate has been evolved, he's Raticate, and so...
Golem.
Oh, that's right, Golem too, I didn't even think about that.
Raticate Golem.
Yeah, so I don't know what's going on there. Maybe Lance just doesn't know what he's talking about. He's so focused on dragon type, he doesn't even know.
Gravy.
Oh, that's right, Gravy.
It's in the front, I've random.
Is he Golem then, or is he Graveler?
He's Graveler.
That's right. I kept calling him Golem, but he's Graveler, which is why he's Gravy. So, with Golem, at least, it would suggest that, or Graveler, it would suggest that he hasn't fully evolved. He is evolved, but not fully evolved. But Rattata is fully evolved. So, again, I'm wondering if the translation maybe was that, like, none of them are fully evolved except one, instead of none of them are. Or not one of them. Because I think he uses the words, not one of them is evolved.
He goes, but not one of them has been evolved.
And I'm wondering if it should have been more, not but one of them is fully evolved. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but she replies, I haven't let them evolve. So it's like...
Yeah, but still, that would still be a proper response for the rest of them still. Like, even if he said, not but one of them, saying, I haven't let them, was fine. Because, yeah, I mean, that makes sense. She learned that she can stop them from evolving, so she has. And then Lance warns her he is not going to pull any punches.
That was already made obvious, but you destroyed a city.
Yeah, well, I think you just met in this battle, but yes. Then we get an adorable three panels of Pika giving little sparks, Caterpie swirling some silk, and Ammonite shooting out a tiny spurt of water, all to show that they are ready. Because, like, it's their, like, little combat things. But they're just, like, it's just little Caterpie swirling some silk.
and
Omni's little spurt of water is like, oh man, you're gonna get me compared to my Gyarados.
He has his, like, two of his tentacles, like, curled up and his eyebrows froze.
Like, yeah, they all look very, like, intense, like, yeah. We're gonna take this on. Yeah, I was very amused. So then Lance lifts off in a much more intimidating display and says that first, maybe he should rejuvenate his Dragonair and Aerodactyl. And Yellow is shocked. Chapter 82. Eradicate, Raticate. All Lance does is touch his Pokemon, and they feel better. And Yellow finds the stories were true, that Lance has that power too. You know, the same power Yellow has been showing all this time. touching Pokemon and healing them. Mewtwo rattles in the Master Ball at Yellow's side, and so Yellow points out Lance's power and how she has that power too to heal Pokemon and read their minds. She also explains that it is said every so many years a child is born near Viridian Forest that has the powers of that forest, which is what she has, and what apparently Lance has. She also mentions that Green must have known about Lance, and it was why she had chosen Yellow to take on this mission. But Yellow has her doubts that she can go up against Lance. Mewtwo rattles around again, and she takes it to mean that he believes in her, and so she charges forward with her Pokemon team. They reach the top of an apparently active volcano that Lance is flying over. He claims that it is close to erupting and will make the perfect backdrop to their final fight. Then he launches Dragonite at Yellow, and it breaks some rocks which send lava bursting forth that sets some clothing on fire.
Oh, and Yellow's running and going, hot, 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 hot! And Omni is just like trying to put the fires out by squirting her.
Yep. Omni is really handy in that regard.
Yeah. Yellow
realizes that Blaine's training with Mewtwo and the fireballs, remember when we got back to Cinnabar Island with Yellow to look for Red, Blaine was in disguise fighting some youngster or whatever.
Yeah,
and the hunter like threw fireballs, or no, hunter, Growlithe, I don't know, some Pokemon he had was throwing fireballs, and Blaine used Mewtwo to fight him back while they were fighting on the bridge, battling, practicing. You don't remember any of that, do you?
I kind of remember him fighting Mr. Disguise much more.
Well, he was in disguise. Youngster wasn't in disguise.
Junior
Trainer. I think it was Junior Trainer. Sorry. Anyway, so yeah. Yellow realizes Blaine's training with Mewtwo in that scene, and Blue's training, and when Yellow followed Blue out to the middle of nowhere, and when Blue was training with the falling rocks where he cut them in half or whatever, were likely in preparation for this type of fight right here. And she is amazed at how much better trainers they are than she is. But she shakes it off and says she mustn't be afraid, and so she launches Dodie and Ratty at Dragonite, having them peck and superfang the beast. He snorts and throws them off of him. Next, Yellow sends in Gravy, Omni, and Kitty, but they all get whacked away too, and Lance tells her that they are no match for Dragonite's armor-like skin. He taunts her and asks if she will run away, but she says she can't because all those cities will be destroyed. He then explains that he will rebuild them and cleanse them of arrogant humanity and have Pokemon live in true freedom. Okay, you arrogant human, is my thought about this guy. He's so arrogant about this, and he's a human.
He is worse than most other humans.
Yep. Yellow yells at Lance, and how while she has seen selfishness in humans and the harm it has caused, it doesn't give one the right to destroy. And she says that Pokemon are not tools for revenge, because Lance is using them like tools. Then Yellow explains how she hates fighting and seeing Pokemon getting hurt, even her opponent's Pokemon. She says this while healing some of her Pokemon, by touching them, you know.
Yeah.
She asks why he uses his incredible power for evil instead of helping. He starts calling her arrogant, but she keeps going. She says that the first person who introduced me to Pokemon once told me, if you care for them with a kind and gentle heart, then they'll always be your friends. And when this part pops up, we get a panel of the person that must have told her this, but they are partly hidden in shadow. Despite that, it seems pretty clear who it was that told her this.
Yeah.
But if you haven't guessed it yet yourselves, that's okay. It'll become very clear very soon. So anyway, Yellow asks, aren't Pokemon your friends too? Lance just gets angry and has Dragonite fire blast right at Yellow, sending her on a rock tumbling down toward the lava. And I thought this was all interesting because, like, when you bring up points that counter what a person is thinking, you can actually have a good discussion if they're willing to, but most of the time, if they don't have anything to say back to it, they just start getting angry, which is what Lance does, which just makes him seem more wrong.
Yeah.
So then we end up in chapter 83, Bang the Drum, Slowbro. Now we're back on Cinnabar Island and find it is being attacked by Dragonair. I like a bunch of Dragonair, not just one. The junior trainer that we talked about earlier, who was training, like helping Blaine train as Mewtwo, and the super nerd who's been, you know, hanging out inside the lab, are there and witness the gym get destroyed. Junior trainer says it'll be all right. They just have to trust the good trainers who are battling on Cerise Island. Then we go back to the battle between Sabrina and Lorelai. So we're still not finding out what happened to poor Yellow as she fell into the lava. Sabrina is surprised her attacks aren't doing anything, but then Lorelai explains that Slowbro can use the amnesia move to forget what happened in the most recent attack and make like it never even happened. Which I thought was weird, because I don't think that's what amnesia does in the game. And it's also just a weird concept. It's like, oh, well, I'm not hurt by it because I don't remember it happening.
But eventually you would get exhausted and hurt at right? some point.
Yeah.
I mean, sure, it'd take a lot slower because a lot of the pain is mental, but...
Slower? Anyway, she explains that Slowbro can be quite sharp and knew about the horsey ploy, and that with the shelter biting its tail being part of it, Slowbro can keep an eye in multiple directions. So, the horsey ploy from when they first got to the island?
Yeah.
And they were, and they hooked the horsey onto the Slowbro. Yeah. But apparently the shelter is like a second set of eyes.
She's also still attached to Green.
Sabrina?
Yeah.
Yeah. It makes Slowbro powerful, and so, could you imagine what would happen if a shelter bit a Slowpoke's head instead? And then we are treated to a panel with a slightly obscured image of what we all might recognize to be a Slowking. So she's hinting at another kind of Pokemon to come. Mm-hmm. But we all got to meet Slowking in the movie a little while ago, so we recognize what's up. Lorelai is relentless and has Jinx hit Sabrina, and now the still unconscious Green is dangling off a cliff, still cuffed to Sabrina. Lorelai suggested she cut the dead weight and save herself, but Sabrina won't turn her back on a partner, and her and Green are partners until the Elite Four are finished. Lorelai mocks the sentimentality and says that it is what led to Team Rocket's downfall. See, they have no room in their hearts for compassion or loyalty, apparently. The Elite Four are not good people. No wonder they hate humanity if they see them for what the Elite Four themselves are. Because if they just see... It's common for people that do stupid things or mean things or, like, betray people, lie to people, to assume that those around them are doing the exact same thing. Because that's what they know and that's what they would do. And so if the Elite Four see everybody else through the lens of what they themselves are doing, then yeah, they're going to hate humanity even if they don't recognize the problem is in themselves.
Yeah.
Anyway, Lorelai knocks Green and Sabrina off the cliff. But as they fall, Green peeks open her eyes. Has she actually been unconscious this whole time? Lorelai and Jinx look down the cliff to be sure they've fallen, and she turns away. But then there is a rumbling from down in the pit. Then Green arrives with the fallen Sabrina, who seems to be the unconscious one now, riding on Blastoise, who jetted them all the way up there. Good old flying Blastoise. Then Lorelai asks if Green is smart enough to know why Lorelai targeted her, and Green says it was because she helped Yellow and got in their way. Lorelai says that's very good, and she was very good, and she adds that she was done being humiliated. So, you know, she has a lot of pride. These people are the worst. Anyway, she asks Green if she is willing to explain her irrational acts, quote-unquote. So Green does, and we have black borders on the panels to illustrate we're getting some backstory images now. And here we get into a whole big thing. So, she explains that after the tournament, she went looking for the Pokemon that had carried her off as a child to that strange new land. But we then see she ends up on a phone call with a mysterious character with longish hair, and that character explains that Lance is planning something. He has a special power. And to stop him, one would need to find another Viridian trainer with a similar power and also a Pokemon from that forest as well. Then, while on the phone call, floating up in the air with on top of Jigglypuff, she sees Pika rushing into some bushes, and he is pursued by a Hitmonlee, which goes back to what we saw in the red flashback where he got frozen and Pika ran away and Hitmonlee was involved.
Yeah.
So we're finally connecting those dots and finding out where Pika went. Green loses him, but recognizes Pika and saw that he was hurt and assumes something must have happened to Red. Green goes looking for Pika in the Viridian Forest and comes upon a girl with long blonde hair and a ponytail who's fishing. Beside her is a sketchbook and her Rattata. Green asks the girl if she's seen a Pikachu and the girl says no, but to hold on a sec. Then she holds her hands by Rattata and then says that Ratty hasn't seen the Pikachu either. Green is thinking that this is Viridian Forest, and the girl could read the Pokemon's mind, which is a special power, and so, could it be? Then a gust of wind blows open the sketchbook, and it ends up on a sort of chibi version of Red drawn in there. So now, this mysterious girl has a picture of Red drawn in her notebook. Green asks if the girl knows this person, and she says yes, that he was the one that saved her when she was lost in the forest 2 years ago. It was only after that she learned that he had defeated the people responsible for using the forest. Then Green asks if the girl has seen him since then, and she says no. Green claims to be a friend of Red's, and that Red is in trouble. The girl is astonished to hear the person who saved her is in trouble, and we get a memory shot of her being saved by Red and Venusaur against the Dratini from the Dratini chapter, which is right before he faces Giovanni. So this makes it very clear that this is the girl that he rescued, that Red rescued, and then he helped her catch a Rattata, which apparently she named Ratty, and then she was also the one to take care of him after he got hurt real bad fighting and defeating Giovanni.
Yep.
Green asks if the girl would be willing to help save Red because she may have the power to do so. The girl gets a very determined look on her face and nods. So then Green is then explaining over top the story that she taught this new blonde girl a few things and planned to use her to help find Red, but also scout ahead to learn a bit about the Elite Four's battle strategies. In the story, she explains that the girl needs to look for Red's Pikachu, who is probably in the forest and headed toward Pallet Town, and also tells her not to tell anyone about Green, nor to give out her own name. The girl agrees and heads off, but Green stops her quick and plops something on the girl's head. Green explains that it will be harder to guess her identity if everyone thinks she is a boy instead. And then we see a familiar wide-brimmed hat, and Green say her name, Amarillo del Bosque Verde, which we've heard before from Yellow of the Viridian Forest. So now all those dots have been connected.
Now we finally know for sure that she is the girl who Red helped.
Yep. Yellow's whole connection to all of this is that Red helped her a long time ago. She helped him a little bit recover, and she admires Red, and now this is also why she was looking for Pika in Pallet Town.
Yeah.
Then we have Chapter 84, Clefabulous Clefable. Back to the present, Lorelei seems to understand that Green had already put a transmitter and microphone on Yellow's hat before putting it on the girl's head to keep track of her. Then Green says that if Lorelei is wondering why she is telling her all of this, basically monologuing like a villain, she says Lorelei can call it her victory strut, and then she launches Clefable. Lorelei and Jinx wonder where they all went, and it turns out Clefable used Minimize and snuck in and grabbed the ice dolls. That is why they have their little ice cuffs on, because they were warned not to break them, otherwise they would die. Blastoise gives cover for Clefable to get back, but then the dolls are dropped and break right through Green's arm, severing her cuffed hand from her body. So she loses her arm in real life. It comes right off. She collapses and says she meant to do that because now she isn't holding Sabrina back. Oh, but it is just a little more trickery on Green's part. She's a very tricky person. Lorelei goes towards the hand and it becomes Ditto, who wraps itself all around Lorelei while Green reveals her real arm. Lorelei begins to wonder if all that they did was for naught, like the Elite Four. Lorelei begins to wonder if all the Elite Four had done was for naught. And Green explains that Lorelei has been fighting the wrong battle. Then she tells Ditto they should go wake up Sabrina, but Sabrina is already awake and quite annoyed that she could have gone her separate way all that time and was simply cuffed to a Ditto. Then we cut back to the Onyx Bridge Chamber. Red is on his bike and ready to face Bruno, while Bill is still hanging out in the magneton prism. Bruno is fighting against some terrible headache and darkness, and Red asks if Lieutenant Surge would mind letting Red handle the battle. Lieutenant Surge says he's used up most his energy anyway, and realizes Red wouldn't listen even if he said no. Bill warns Red about Hitmonlee and how it had destroyed his house, and Bruno is confused and thinks to himself, he has no memory of doing that. He also realizes that his memories of battling Red are in pieces, but it doesn't matter. Now he gets to face Red, who he finds to be the perfect opponent, and that the battle will be pure this time. Hitmonchan is using Fire Punch on Venusaur, and Red thinks about switching, but doesn't realizes that it was a good move since Hitmonchan also used a Thunder Punch, because he thought about switching to, like, a water Pokemon.
Yeah.
He also knows Ice Punch, and Bruno mentions that it is like having three Pokemon in one, and Red says that they have one like that, too. Then we get an awesome pose of him on his bike, hair over one eye, and he holds in one hand three different objects between his fingers. Lieutenant Surge and Bill recognize them as stones, and then Red unleashes Eevee!
Yay, Eevee!
He wonders which to go with first as Eevee charges forward. Bruno is confident and sends in an ice punch, and so Red uses the Fire Stone to counter, and now we have Flareon. Then, after that, we go to Vaporeon, and Bruno says, "That's impossible." Red explains that normally, yes, but this one was experimented on by Team Rocket, and so he can keep changing, and now wants to do so for Red. And Red has the stones that don't get used up, which we saw were missing way back when Yellow was down there. Remember?
Oh, so he just keeps using the stones to change them.
That's yeah, cool. They're because they're reusable stones.
Yep.
So it's super cool. So Bruno sends out Machamp, who finally sheds his Machoke belt that had absorbed a bunch of power, and now it is all being unleashed. Red sends Poliwrath to help, but it isn't going great as Machamp takes him down and Hitmonchan punches Vaporeon down. Bruno says the match is over because Poliwrath is out and the ace in the hole, Eevee Vaporeon, has been pulverized. But then we see a familiar-looking face in a pool of water behind the fighting Pokemon. Then, after Vaporeon comes out of the little pool, Red switches him to Jolteon and uses Pin Missile, which I thought was an odd choice of move, because it's a bug-type move instead of his normal electric stuff, and I don't think bug-type is actually effective, or super effective, at least, against fighting-type, but whatever. Then Bruno laughs and admits to defeat and how much he loved the battle. And then he tells us that he's never believed in Lance's plan and has no intentions on helping the Elite Four anymore. And that if Red's friends are as good as Red, then they have a chance of stopping the other members. And then he walks away. To be continued. So that was all very cool. And I loved getting some more of Green's trickery action. That's one of the reasons I love Green so much, is that she's always like, got another plan up her sleeve.
Yeah.
She's always up to something. You just can never quite know what she's going to do. Like, even sending Yellow on the mission, it's like, but I also put a microphone and camera on her hat so I could keep track of what the Elite Four are doing and learn what the, like, how they fight and stuff.
She's always thinking it two steps ahead.
Yeah. She's a wily one. So that's our manga, and we just have one more half to finish that off next week. Now it's time for part 5 of our Yellow Pokedex entries.
Who's that Pokemon?
We'll be starting with Execute, number 102. Egg Pokemon, Grass and Psychic. The heads attract each other and spin around. There must be 6 heads for it to maintain balance.
Number 103. Executor, Coconut Pokemon, Grass is Psychic type. Its cries are very noisy. This is because each of the 3 heads thinks about whatever it likes.
Cubone, number 104, Lonely Pokemon, Ground type. Wears the skull of its deceased mother. Its cries echo inside the skull and come out as a sad melody.
Number 105, Marowak, Bone Keeper Pokemon, Ground type. Small and weak, this Pokemon is adept with its bone club. It has grown more vicious over the ages.
Yeah, I really like Marowak. That Pokemon has just kind of grown on me as time has gone on. Especially with some of the anime episodes giving him, like, the samurai-esqueness where the club is a sword. Like, I know he uses it as a, like, a boomerang kind of thing sometimes, too. But I really like the sword aspect. And Alolan Marowak is pretty cool, too.
I was about to say, don't you really like Alolan Marowak?
Hitmonlee, number 106. Kicking Pokemon, Fighting type. And Hitmonlee, I'm pretty sure, is the name of it is based off of, like, Bruce Lee, who's a famous martial artist in movies and stuff, kind of like Jackie Chan, which is where Hitmonchan comes from.
That's cool.
Is my is what I'm pretty sure. I haven't looked into it, I guess, but it seems likely. But it's extra funny because of the episode that we're covering today, Enter the Dragonite, because that actually is based off the title of Enter the Dragon, which was a Bruce Lee movie.
Have I seen any Bruce Lee movies?
I don't think so. Enter the Dragon came out in like the 70s. Not that you haven't watched old movies. But
I was about to be like, I've watched lots of old movies.
When kicking, the sole on its foot turns as hard as a diamond on impact and destroys its enemy. Well, that's cool.
What Pokemon are you reading?
Hitmonlee.
Ugh. Number 107. Hitmonchan. Punching Pokemon. Fighting type. Punches in corkscrew fashion. It can punch its way through a concrete wall in the same way as a drill.
Lickitung. Number 108. Licking Pokemon. Its tongue spans almost 7 feet and moves more freely than its forelegs. Its licks can cause paralysis.
Number 109. Coughing. Poison gas Pokemon. Poison type. In hot places, its internal gases could expand and explode without any warning. Be very careful.
Wheezing. Number 110. Poison gas Pokemon. It lives and grows by absorbing dust, germs, and poison gases that are contained in toxic waste and garbage. See? This is another example that, like certain Pokemon, exist and survive off of the things that are supposedly all these bad things that humans are creating that the manga is complaining about.
Yeah.
So, I'm just like, but some of the Pokemon wouldn't exist then.
I think Grimer are created in, like,
sludge of some kind, yeah.
Yeah. Rhyhorn, number 111. Spikes Pokemon. Spikes Pokemon. Ground Rock. A Pokemon with a one-track mind. Once it charges, it won't stop running until it falls asleep.
Interesting. Rhydon, number 112. Drill Pokemon. Ground and Rock. Walks on its hind legs. Shows signs of intelligence. Its armor-like hide even repels molten lava.
Chansey, number 113. Egg Pokemon. Normal type. A gentle and kind-hearted Pokemon that shares its nutritious egg if it sees injured Pokemon.
Kangaskhan, number 115. Parent Pokemon. Normal type. Raises its young in its belly pouch. Won't run from any fight to keep its young protected.
Is that just for the female ones or the male ones too?
Good question. Since all Kangaskhan I've seen has the pouch with the Pokemon in it, I have to wonder if that's just, like, that's what a Kangaskhan is. A Pokemon with a little Kangaskhan inside of it. Some of these things don't make a ton of sense. I don't know. I mean, you have Execute, which is a bunch of eggs sort of things together, so.
And how are new Pokemon born? Like, are they born from just the environment all the time? Or, like, I feel like Pokemon would be parents to other Pokemon.
Well, I know at least in the games eventually, and we have it in Pokemon Go as well, is that they're hatched from eggs.
But are all Pokemon hatched from eggs?
Don't know. Don't know. It doesn't all make a ton of sense, I don't think.
Horsea, number 116. Dragon Pokemon. Water type. If it senses any danger, it will vigorously spray water or a special type of ink from its mouth.
A dragon Pokemon that isn't a dragon type Pokemon? Seadra, number 117. Dragon Pokemon. Water type. Touching the back fin causes numbness. It hooks its tail to coral to stay in place while sleeping.
Goldeen, number 118. Goldfish Pokemon. Water type. When it is time for them to lay eggs, they can be seen swimming up rivers and fall in large groups.
Sea King, Goldfish Pokemon. It is the male's job to make a nest by carving out boulders in a stream using the horn on its head.
Staryu, number 120. Star-shaped Pokemon. Water type.
Hold on. All right, try again.
Staryu, number 120. Star-shaped Pokemon. Water type. As long as the center section is unharmed, it can grow back full even if it is... It can grow back fully even if it is chopped to bits.
Whoa. It's like the Wolverine of Pokemon. The X-Men Wolverine, not the actual animal. Starmie, number 121. Mysterious Pokemon. Water. Psychic. The center section is named the core. People think it is communicating when it glows in seven colors. Kind of neat.
Mr. Mime, number 122, Barrier Pokemon, Psychic type. Always practices its pantomime act. It makes enemies believe something exists that really doesn't.
Scyther, number 123, Mantis Pokemon, leaps out of tall grass and slices prey with its scythes. The movement looks like that of a ninja.
Jinx, number 124, Human Shape Pokemon. Human Shape. Ice psychic type appears to move to a rhythm of its own as if it were dancing. It wiggles its hips as it walks.
Electabuzz, number 125, electric Pokemon, electric type. I know that's a surprise. If a major power outage occurs, it is certain that this Pokemon has eaten electricity at a power plant.
Magmar, number 126, Spitfire Pokemon, fire type. Born in an active volcano, its body is always cloaked in flames, so it looks like a big ball of fire.
And that is our Pokedex this week. Next week will be our final entry for the Yellow Pokedex, and it'll be our final episode for the Orange Islands before we take our little break. So now we will move on to the anime. So our first one is kind of fillery, but it's a fun one. It's called The Wacky Watcher. We start off with the gang on the Lapras once again, like we used to do all the time at the beginning of the Orange Islands.
Yeah.
But this one has an interesting encounter as something shoots by underneath and then pops up. And it's a submarine. And the man inside is an unusual sort of fellow with an unusual name, Quincy T. Quackenpoker. Making him more interesting is that he has a similar appearance and a way of talking to Groucho Marx from the Marx Brothers. And he has a lot of one-liners and things like that that just follow that kind of feel of a Marx Brothers movie. But here, this guy is a famous Pokemon watcher, which has Tracy excited, of course. He mentions that it is almost rush hour, and then we get a flood of Magikarp swimming by and towards some island that is supposedly where they are born. They all also have color-coded bands around their tails, and apparently these mark how many years since they left the island, all applied by Quackenpoker himself. Once on the island, they find the Magikarp swim upstream, which is odd, and eventually go up a waterfall even, which is really odd. Some can't quite make it up the waterfall, but they keep trying, and one of the characters figures out that the Magikarp are gone for a while to get stronger so that when they return, they can get up the waterfall. I forget who makes this comment. And, of course, Quackenpoker already knew this, but somebody else, like, pieces that together. It's probably Tracy, but I was going
to say, it's probably Tracy. He talks about it a lot.
Yeah, Tracy kind of is a secondary star to this one, so.
It could have been Misty who mentioned that, though. I could see her saying that.
Sure. Yeah, really, any of them could have said something. Though they don't usually give Ash the smart lines.
That's true. Well, they sometimes give him, quote unquote, the smart lines when it's already been mentioned like 5 times or something.
Right. Well, yeah, I know there's that one time where he's like helping that other girl train her Raichu or Pikachu.
Oh, yeah.
And Misty's Raichu. Like Tracy's like, oh, he's so smart. And Misty's like, he's just saying what Brock has already told him. So it's around here that Team Rocket starts making their plans to catch a ton of Magikarp so they can build an army of Gyarados. Which is interesting. And then I think James or something mentions that they haven't had good luck with Gyarados, so this might not be the best idea. But Jesse convinces them to do it, so. And I also have to note that finally they're getting the idea that they're going to catch Pokemon and actually train them, which they've not really shown an interest in doing. Honestly, what their plan is right here isn't even like a crime.
Because they're just catching wild.
They're just going to catch Pokemon. Just because somebody else is trying to observe them and watch them, that doesn't make it wrong what they're trying to do. Nope. The way the story plays out, it makes it seem like it is, and they do eventually do some stupid stuff, but they're not really wrong at this point.
No, they're just gonna go catch a Magikarp. I feel like what's wrong is putting rubber bands on the poor Magikarp.
Yeah, that doesn't seem like it would be a bad idea, but apparently they don't care, so whatever.
So, Mr. Quackenpoker is the wrong one.
Now, unfortunately, Team Rocket find Pokeballs are too expensive, so they're just going to use nets to catch them, which this seems foolish, but whatever. Foolish, not wrong, just foolish.
Yeah.
And James actually gets one, and he's very excited, but of course, it basically does its splash move and flops right out, and then they all try to grab the Magikarp, and it flops around on the beach for a while, and they are flopped around with it because apparently it's a strong, heavy Magikarp, and then they all end up in the water.
Still not wrong. Just saying.
Yeah, it's just really funny how bad they are at this. So then later at night, Quack and Poker seems to be getting ready to see the Magikarp evolve. A bunch of them are supposedly going to evolve that night. But then the Magikarp start acting funny in the water and swimming crazily, like in a panic or whatever. And it's because they are being sucked into Team Rocket's Magikarp sub.
Which, I mean, seems a little abusive, but it's still, I guess, not wrong.
That one might be. I don't know the rules for catching Pokemon, but it seems like a cheater's way to try to do it.
It seems just as wrong as putting rubber bands on the mouse.
It's kind of like, well, I don't know about that, but it's kind of like how you're supposed to get, like, tags to go hunting, but you're only allowed so many so that you don't hunt them to extinction, right?
I suppose.
And so it's kind of like that almost, where they're taking a whole group out of one area, and that seems like that could be dangerous. But again, I don't know the world that well, then they can make it wrong if they want to or not, so.
So, it still might not be wrong.
It might not be. But it doesn't work very well for them because that's too many Magikarp for the little sub and it starts to sink. So they start pooping them back out of the back of the sub, which I don't know how that all works, but whatever. And so then when they come out, they decide, like, they give up on this plan when they find Pikachu there, and they just grab Pikachu with, like, a little arm and stick him into a glass container once again.
Now they're officially doing wrong.
And now they're being wrong, yep. And so then Ash tries to have Pikachu use Thunderbolt, which probably wouldn't have worked anyway because of the glass, but Quack and Poker stops him before he can even try because that would hurt all the Magikarp. Because Ash keeps forgetting that when he's by water, using Pikachu's thunder stuff is a bad idea. But then somehow, I don't remember exactly how, a Magikarp gets stuck on James's head. And so Quack and Poker has to help free him because they're all trying to yank him off, but it's not going to work, and he has to, like, just gently get him off.
What you mean? That makes sense.
Yep. It's kind of like those Chinese finger traps. If you pull real hard, then you're just more stuck.
Yeah.
And oh, yeah. And then when it gets off of James's head, finally, it evolves into a Gyarados. And I can't remember exactly what happened here, if it was just that Gyarados or when we had a bunch more Gyarados show up. But I think it was just this one. And basically, that Gyarados decides to fight Team Rocket then and smacks them off to where Team Rocket is splashing off again.
Ding. Ding.
And then, with all the other Magikarp evolving into Gyarados, Quack and Poker decides to get Tracy to help count them all by keeping track of what. And so, like, he splits the color bands in half. So Tracy counts a bunch, and Quack and Poker counts a bunch, because they want to see how many of them actually evolved out of the ones he's been tracking.
And I think it was mentioned earlier that he put the bands on there for, like, there were three different colors or something for each year that they were born.
Yeah, I think he shows that, but I think with the counting he mentions like four colors or something, so I don't know.
I thought it was like three.
I think in one scene it mentions three, and another it mentions four. Like, I don't think it's consistent.
I didn't notice that.
I could be wrong. I maybe misremember, but I thought that's what happened. Anyway, so they all run off talking, and then I forgot earlier when they had a little break while they were like eating lunch and stuff before it got dark and everything, Quack and Poker actually explained to Misty that Togepi likes having its little crown parts pet, which suggests that Quack and Poker has run into Togepi before. So, so that means he's been other places than Kanto and Orange Islands, I'm guessing. But yeah, once all is said and done with Team Rocket, like, everybody has said goodbye, everything's great with them, they've, like, had their adventure with Quack and Poker, and that's pretty much the story there. And so then we catch back up with Team Rocket, who is once again on top of a rock sticking out of the water, surrounded by Gyarados spinning around them. This has happened one other time at least, and they also had issues with Gyarados spinning around in a circle doing their, like, fury attack way back when James kicked a Magikarp off their little raft after the whole SS Anne thing sunk, and, or Saint Anne, I guess it was in the anime, and turned into a Gyarados, which sent them all to that island of giant Pokemon.
I think there were at least two other times that they were surrounded by Gyarados, except I'm not including the episode you just talked about.
Okay, yeah. All I remember for sure is the one where he kicked it off the raft, this one, and then the big P. Kahuna one.
I don't remember what the episode was called or what it looked like, but I think another time they were surrounded by Gyarados on a rock.
It's quite possible, but the Humunga Dunga one, they definitely were.
Yeah.
So. All right, and then we move on to the next episode. Stunspore Detour. Here we have the gang taking a break on an island, and Ash is training for the Orangeling competition. Or at least he's trying to. I don't remember exactly, but I think like a wave crashed in at some point, kind of like putting that attempt on hold for a second, like it kind of battered them around. So they start walking back and find Tracy really close up to a Vileplume getting measurements and sketching the Pokemon. Then Ash trips over a rock, which has him fall into Tracy, which sends them both headfirst into the center of Vileplume's petals, where it then bursts with stun spore. So they got like an up-close personal face full of stun spore. And she wasn't faced like in there like that, but we all saw how stun spore affected Professor Ivy.
Yeah, it was real bad.
It was real bad. And they had to go to a Pokemon Center, which doesn't seem like there's one nearby for this one, because Pikachu rushes to get Misty's help and tries to explain what happened in Pikachu's way of saying Pika Pika Pika, which, you know, is untranslatable.
And then he uses his arms.
That's true. Pika, pika. That's true. He does use his arms. Ash and Tracy then make it to her as well, and they are in bad shape. They're running fevers and are stunned. Not paralyzed, just stunned. They can still move. And we, let's see. So Misty checks the bags and finds no antidotes for stun spores, only Band-Aids. So she looks at a map for the nearest Pokemon Center, which is 30 miles away on a different island. So that's no good. So at Tracy's suggestion, she checks the Pokedex and finds out that there's a special weed that can be cooked up and heal the gang up. And it's called Salveo weed, I believe. It grows in the bottom of like fresh water, and Poliwag are often seen nearby it. So she goes out looking. Meanwhile, James and Meowth are about to fall in an effort to pick a single apple they found in a tree. They tumble and get hurt in the process, but they manage to obtain it. They take it into a cabin and give it to Jessie, who is also struck with a fever. Turns out she fell into a Vileplume herself and got stun spored just like the others.
Conveniently?
Yes, conveniently. The show is all about coincidences. But she is also a lot more energetic than the others, because she can still yell, shout, and demand, and smack people. But she only wanted the apple because it would be more red than her skin when she woke from her fever dream. It had nothing to do with eating it. James and Meowth are, of course, annoyed by this. However, James does recall when he had been stun spored as a kid, he had been given a remedy. And it was that special weed we learned about from the Pokedex just earlier. So they are also going out to look for some Salveo weed. And they get disguises because that's what they do. But mostly, Meowth explains that they need him because otherwise they would think Team Rocket was up to some nefarious plot. Which, once again, they're not currently trying to do something nefarious.
At least there's that.
So two episodes in a row, right? I mean, they eventually tried to do something bad by stealing Pikachu.
Yeah, but...
And yes, spoilers, they try to do something bad here too. But but they run into a Poliwag who has Salveo weed stuck to its tail. James remembers that his dad or someone used a Poliwag to find the weed when he was a kid, so he and Meowth try to catch the Poliwag to force it to show them where the weed is. Meowth even tackles him at one point, but while James is saying something and not helping, Poliwag escapes. Then we cut to Misty walking along with Togepi when they run into the frightened Poliwag. Misty is, of course, nice to it, and then James and Meowth arrive and demand she hand over the Poliwag. And the little tadpole Pokemon indicates that they were the ones being mean to it. So Misty and James battle. Oh, I also forgot to mention that when they were trying to catch the Poliwag, James and Meowth, James brought out Victory Bell, which usually eats him. But in this scene, when he sends Victory Bell out, he is constantly running and shouting at the Victory Bell, chasing him, and he's pointing over at the Poliwag, and he's like, "Don't eat me, get him!" And it was just so funny. And Victory Bell listened, which was cool, but it was just, it was so funny to me to see him, like, after releasing him, he's just booking it so he doesn't get eaten. Yeah. So, anyway, Misty and James battle Goldene versus Victory Bell. Goldene wins, and so James sends out Weezing, and Misty defeats it with Staryu. So finally, Meowth jumps in, and Misty sends out Psyduck. Meowth claws Psyduck right in the face and then latches his mouth right on top of Psyduck's head. Psyduck just sits there confused like Psyduck does. And Misty tells him to get a headache. Eventually it builds up enough and Psyduck uses confusion and defeats Meowth. So with Team Rocket gone, Misty uses the Pokedex on the Poliwag, and this is where it explains to her that Poliwag can be used to help find Salveo weed. So then Misty talks about finding the Salveo, and the Pokemon jumps into the water, and she's like, no, don't leave. But then he comes out with a strand of the Salveo weed. Apparently, there's a bunch at the bottom, and so Misty uses Staryu to swim down there and collect a ton. So then they have, like, just a whole bunch of it, and she even mentions that they have more than enough when they leave. Mm-hmm. James and Meowth, meanwhile, are making a plan to steal the Salveo weed from Misty. So here's where they go wrong. So they think of what could entice a girl. Well, I mean, they were kind of mean to Poliwag, too. But So they think of what they could use to entice a girl to fall into a trap. And so they lay out a bunch of different things, like clothes and makeup, along the path over pits and stuff to try and trap Misty. It almost works once or twice, but Misty is determined to get back and cook up the weed to save her friends. James and Meowth reflect that maybe they should have not based their plan on what would have worked on Jesse. Then their last plan is to have Meowth pretend to be a baby and James his mother and give a sob story about how the baby is in need of Salveo weed because it got stun spored by a Vileplume. But they're found out because I think Meowth says something. I don't remember exactly what it was, but Misty figures out that it's James and Meowth. So they reveal themselves in the traditional Team Rocket motto flair, with Meowth filling in for Jesse's lines and also saying his usual "that's right" line at the end. So that was kind of fun, having Meowth take over. This time, Poliwag decides to step up, who's been hanging out with Misty still, and smacks them back, and they go tumbling off a cliff. But during the conversation, during the conversation with Team Rocket, before there was a fight, Misty had learned that they actually wanted the Salveo weed to help Jesse. So when Team Rocket climbs back out, they find Misty and her Pokemon gone, but she left a clump of the Salveo weed since she had more than enough. Mm-hmm. Oh, and before all that, she had tried to tell Poliwag that she'd come back and visit after her friends were better so that they could all meet Poliwag, who helped out, but Poliwag wanted to go with her right then to meet the friends and stuff.
Yep.
Which is why he was there to help out with Team Rocket. Then while Misty cures Ash and Tracy, James and Meowth help out Jesse, who gets after them for not being faster so they could take Ash's Pikachu while he's dealing with his fever, since it was just Misty there. But then she also says they should get going right away, because they might still have a chance. James and Meowth are reluctant, since Misty had just helped them save Jesse.
Yep.
Then we see Ash and Tracy feeling better and giving their thanks to Misty, which is interrupted by the sudden appearance of an Arbok breaking through the wall of the cabin and flying right by the gang, I think out the other wall even. Like, he tried to get them as he came through. And it was... What?
Didn't he just, like, dive in the one wall?
He might have only gone through one wall. I don't know. I just know he goes through a wall and almost hits Tracy, Misty, and Ash, but goes right by them. And I don't know if he goes out the other wall or just lands in there or whatever, but he tries to get them. And it was just, I thought the art, the animation for that scene, where he's like coming through just suddenly while they're talking, like you have barely a second to even establish the scene. Like, it flowed really well and it looked cool. Like, it was some cool animation in that scene.
Yeah.
I thought.
Yeah, it was.
So Ash rushes out and battles Jesse, who is frustrated that James and Meowth aren't helping as she starts to lose the battle. They are busy hiding behind a rock and talking about wanting to crawl under it. Mm-hmm. When Jesse goes down, they rush in and grab her and drag her away, saying they need to find a cure for her ingratitude. Uh-huh. They shout back at Ash and Co. saying, "Thanks again!" And when I think one of them says "what" or whatever, or maybe they don't. Maybe they just quickly shift to like, I mean, we're blasting off again. Because they don't want to be caught saying thanks, I guess.
Yeah.
And they rush off on foot this time. So there's no ding. And now everyone is better and Poliwag decides to stick with Misty, meaning she has now got herself a new Pokemon.
Yay.
And then that's that. So now we get the two-parter for the match against the Orange League champion. And we start off with the episode, "Hello, Pomelo." And right off the bat, I want to say this is kind of fun because Pomelo, I don't know, is a type of fruit. And most of the islands are named after fruit, right? Usually citrus fruit, usually oranges, but not always.
Yeah.
So Pomelo is a type of fruit, but it's not spelled this way. And this is spelled Pomelo, like pummel, like to beat up. Like, to pummel somebody?
Yeah.
Because they're going to have a big fight here, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
All right, so Ash and the gang are on Lapras and almost to Pomelo Island. As they sail on Lapras, they see something off in the distance flying around. It's Dragonite, and it turns out there are a bunch of Dragonite statues all over the island. When Ash signs up for his match, he's scheduled to battle the next morning, and we learn that the Dragonite statues are there because of a legend about the island having a Dragonite protector. They even learn that Drake, the Orange League champion, has a Dragonite, and it is a big reason no one has defeated him. Mm-hmm. We see Team Rocket show up in the stadium, where Drake is, I think he's by himself, maybe just training or something, and the Dragonite lands next to him, because it was probably the thing that they saw flying across the water.
Yeah.
And Team Rocket claims they are there to steal the Dragonite, and Drake apparently just has no time for the shenanigans and just tells the Dragonite to hyperbeam them away, and Team Rocket is blasting off again! Ding! So that was their contribution to to this episode. They show up a little bit again, but they don't enact a plan, and I don't think until the next episode. But it was just so funny that they just kind of pop in there, and the champion's like, no. And they're gone. Yeah. So anyway, Ash and Co. take a tour of the Hall of Fame for the different trophy winners of the Orange League. And it turns out that each one of the winners has, like, a cement block or whatever, not even a block, but like a sheet of cement, basically, with all the footprints of the Pokemon that helped them in the battle in the cement, you know, and mm-hmm. then a picture of the trainer and its team. They get put in the Hall of Fame that way, which I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah.
And then we find out Ash wants to bring Snorlax into battle, but he apparently fed the Pokemon, and Nurse Joy explains that Snorlax doesn't wake up until it's hungry again unless there is danger. So Snorlax won't be able to be awake for the match. So Ash has to make a decision, and Professor Oak tells him he could use Kingler, who helped win the first decisive match in the Indigo League for Ash.
Cookie, cookie.
Or he could use Mug, who defeated Bellsprout.
Yes!
So, you know, Ruby's choice. Or he could maybe use Tauros. Ash, of course, chooses Tauros, because Ash likes to pick Pokemon that haven't battled yet. And Misty is hesitant because, you know, it hasn't battled yet, where Ash then just combats that, saying Krabby also hadn't battled yet, and that worked out. Mm-hmm. So apparently Ash just banks on beginner's luck for his Pokemon.
Yeah.
The next day, there are announcements for the upcoming match, which has people in town excited, as it seems there hasn't been one in a while. When Team Rocket hears about it, Meowth has a plan to capture Dragonite after the challenger weakens it, and then he whispers the rest of his... whispers the rest to his companions, and they all agree. We see Ash and the much taller and stronger looking Drake shake hands in the stadium. Oh, and this is actually going to be a full Pokemon match, meaning we're finally going to get a 6-versus-6 Pokemon battle. We also learn the arena is changeable, which kind of reminds me of the Pokemon arena for Smash Brothers, the video game.
Mm.
How it can change into different forms. And we find out that the first one is a rock and water field. And the water is just like a circle pool of water in the center of the field. Yeah. To make it look like where the Pokemon symbol usually is in the regular Pokemon battlefields.
Mm-hmm.
They're also told by the ref that when one trainer has 3 Pokemon that can no longer battle, the arena changes. So another interesting rule for this battle is that the gym trainer, the champion, is not allowed to switch his Pokemon in the middle of battle. But the challenger is.
I mean, it kind of makes sense, because I feel like it's unfair if the trainer, who's fought multiple times, can just switch up.
I mean, I get reasons for either way, so.
Maybe not unfair necessarily, but like, yeah, never mind.
But I thought it was a cool concept. So then we have the match start, and it's Drake's Ditto versus Ash's Pikachu, which really means it's just Pikachu versus Pikachu. It's an intense fight, but Ash's Pikachu wins in the end. And Drake seems like a really good trainer because he tells his Ditto that he did a good job as he returns it. And he also tells Ash that he did well, too. So he's not, like, bitter about it. This is just a battle. Nothing personal, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Tracy makes a comment about how Ash's Pikachu was able to win because he had, like, some more physical training. Like, Ditto can do a lot of the things that a Pikachu can do, but isn't developed like Ash's Pikachu is into the type of Pikachu that he is, you know?
Yep.
So there was all that. So then Drake sends out Onix, and Ash, being smart, chooses a type advantage by sending out Squirtle. Mm-hmm. However, it's not going as well as Ash would have thought, as Onix vanishes underground. Ash tries to have Squirtle get to the pool to hide in there before Onyx pops out, but he's too late and Onyx does come out and binds Squirtle. Then Ash has Squirtle use Withdraw to, like, hide in his shell to protect himself a little bit.
Yeah.
And Drake thinks he's winning the round, but then Squirtle uses Hydro Pump, which he had learned in that third gym battle.
Yeah.
Orange League gym battle. And the Hydro Pump, like, hits Onyx hard that he can't even follow Drake's orders afterwards to go back into the ground. And I have to assume that this must have put Onyx at very low health, because then Ash has Squirtle finish Onyx with a Skull Bash. And I'm pretty sure Skull Bash is a normal type move. I could be wrong, maybe it's fighting, but I think it's a normal type move. And normal type moves do not work very good against rock type.
I actually think it's fighting, because my Blastoise had Skull Bash.
Oh, well now I'm... If maybe it is, not. I will be much more impressed.
Maybe it's not.
So now Drake sends in Gengar, and Ash brings back Squirtle and sends out Tauros. Tracy tells Ash to be careful because there isn't anything that's really good against ghost type, which is true in the first gen, like the first generation of games and stuff.
Yeah.
But Gengar isn't purely ghost. There is no pure ghost. He's also poison. So psychic attacks would be super effective against it. That being said, I don't think Ash has any Pokemon that use psychic moves right now.
Also, Tauros is the worst option being a normal type at all.
That's debatable. Because normal moves don't work against ghost, but ghost moves don't work against normal.
Maybe.
However,
they both have psychic.
What?
Well, then Gengar also is psychic, though.
Gengar, I don't know if he has psychic moves, but he definitely has, like, poison moves and stuff like that, too. So, I mean, he's still a problem. You're probably right, though. I think he does have psychic moves. Either way, yeah, he's going to beat up Tauros pretty bad. So Tauros is not a good option. If it was the video game, at least. And Drake, when he sees all that, says he knew Ash would slip up eventually. So he also sees that this is probably not a good option. And then Tauros gets confused by Gengar. So you're probably right. It probably was using a psychic move. With that not going so well, Ash calls in Tauros and sends out Lapras. So he apparently decided to bring Lapras with his six Pokemon, which was a little bit of a surprise for me. I hadn't expected to see him.
Yeah.
Gengar uses Hypnosis, but Lapras dives under water to escape it and then shoots a water gun at Gengar. And then Gengar uses Nightshade and Lapras uses Ice Beam, and they both have like an almost electric-y kind of flare to them, but blue and like shadowy colors or whatever, and they collide, creating a huge explosion, and everyone fears for their Pokemon, because like Ash is like, Lapras! And I think even Drake is like, Gengar! And we're left on a cliffhanger. And I thought this was awesome. I loved that we finally got a full 6-on-6 battle, and I really like that it's also being carried over multiple episodes, and I want the show to do more of this instead of extra filler episodes. Why don't we just have battles that last a couple episodes with a little bit of story on either side. That's cool.
Some filler episodes are kind of cool.
Yeah, no, having a few, like some of the world building ones, like I really like the Magnemite Rancher one and stuff like that, you know? But there's so many that don't need to exist and we can just have some cool battles, you know?
Yeah.
And so then we have our final episode that we're covering this week. Enter the Dragonite, which is a play off of a Bruce Lee movie called Enter the Dragon.
I think I've heard that title before.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I don't think I've ever seen the movie, but I've heard the title.
You want to know something?
What?
I don't think I've ever seen the movie. I know about it. Know a lot about it, actually, because it was quite popular, especially for, like Bruce Lee was super popular, and then, like, yeah, martial arty stuff. I knew some people that were really into martial arts movies, so, like, I've heard a lot about Enter the Dragon, but I don't think I've ever watched it either. So yeah, we catch back up after the explosion, and when the smoke clears, we find both Gengar and Lapras are defeated. So Ash has lost his first Pokemon, but Drake has lost three Pokemon, which means field change.
I'm so sad that Lapras lasted such a short time.
Oh, in the battle?
Yeah.
Yeah, well. This is the first time a challenger has defeated three of Drake's Pokemon in a row. Apparently. Drake holds the Pokeball at the end of his necklace, because he has a little one hanging off a necklace, and says that this is the only strategy he needs to win.
Mm-hmm.
Team Rocket is in the audience, and James says Ash is doing pretty good. Jesse says he isn't that great, and James rightly points out that he has managed to beat them all the time, so what does that say about them, if he's not that great? Anyway, we see a sandy field this time, and so it's Venusaur versus Tauros. He tries to have Tauros use a fissure move again, which he had used in an earlier battle, but it doesn't work in the sand. So then Venusaur gets ready to solar beam, and while it's charging, Tauros charges in and grapples Venusaur. And Drake's like, solar beam now! And Ash says, Tauros, send Venusaur soaring now! Which I thought was kind of funny. Because it was kind of a play off the solar beam. The solar beam comes down while Venusaur is in the air, but Tauros takes it, and then Tauros finishes off Venusaur. Next is Electabuzz, and Tauros is tired, and so Ash brings him back and sends out one of his Pokemon that are fresh, which turns out to be Bulbasaur. Electabuzz wins this fight with a Thunder Punch, and they mention his high level, which explains the defeat of a grass type by Electric, because Electric is not very effective against grass.
Yeah.
Then Charizard is released, and the announcer says this is wise because it is Ash's only fully evolved Pokemon. But my thought was, isn't he a flying type? So is sending him out against Electabuzz actually a good idea? Doesn't seem like it to me. Charizard uses Seismic Toss against Electabuzz and wins. What?
Also, how does the announcer know it's his only fully evolved Pokemon?
Because they see the lineup of Pokemon on the big screen, which shows them darken when they get taken out.
Oh, I guess only fully evolved Pokemon that he's using.
Right. I think that's what that means, yeah.
Because I guess Muk is fully evolved too, isn't he?
Muk would be fully evolved, yep.
So.
And argue, I mean, you could argue that Lapras is fully evolved too, but Lapras doesn't evolve at all, so it's not really fully evolved because it doesn't evolve.
I wouldn't really try to argue at that point.
I'm just saying one could. It's at its final stage because it's only got one stage.
Yeah, but didn't evolve, so it can't ever be fully evolved.
I agree. All right, but Charizard ends up flying up in the air with Electabuzz out there and then Seismic tosses him down to the ground and defeats him.
Because then he basically, throwing him into the ground is kind of using ground against Electric. Ah,
That's funny. I didn't think about that. Then, after Charizard wins against Electabuzz, you know what he does? He starts shooting fire up into the air in excitement. Just like he did on the boat in Pokemon 2000 the movie. And this is definitely after Charizard chills, so this all fits within what Charizard does while still obeying Ash.
Yeah.
So that all seemed to make sense to me. I just like the extra confirmation. And now Drake only has one Pokemon left, and so he sends in Dragonite from his necklace Pokeball.
He only had one left, and Ash still has five? Does he still have all five?
Yep.
I'm like, it's gonna get down to one-on-one.
Well, obviously.
It's one-on-one.
So Dragonite apparently knows Water Gun, which cuts through Charizard's flamethrower. And then Charizard flies, and Dragonite uses Ice Beam, but Charizard dodges. Both Pokemon are flying around in battle, dodging and weaving. Despite being slammed down by Dragonite and the water attack earlier, Charizard is still going. Charizard and Dragonite use Dragon Rage against one another in an explosive result, which has both exhausted, and then Charizard collapses. James is ready to grab Dragonite now that he seems tired, but Jesse and Meowth tell him to sit down as they're enjoying this. Ash calls in Charizard and tells him he did good for weakening Dragonite and that they will need to work as a team to defeat Dragonite.
Because if they just keep weakening him,
it'd
be easy to defeat.
So then Squirtle is sent in, and Dragonite has an electric attack. It hurts Squirtle pretty bad, but Squirtle is still going. Squirtle gets some more licks in before being taken out. So we now have had Lapras, Squirtle, Bulbasaur, and Charizard taken out, which is four of Ash's Pokemon, and the field hasn't changed. I thought it was supposed to change after three Pokemon were taken out. Apparently, it only changes once. They didn't seem to suggest that when they talked about it earlier.
I just presumed that some...
I thought every time they lost three Pokemon, it would change. So it could change twice throughout the match, I guess. But
I thought it was just once.
Apparently, it was only once. Your assumption turns out to be the correct one, apparently.
Your assumption doesn't seem like it would be wrong.
Then Team Rocket arrives with their balloon, because then... Well, so in the middle of there, Jesse and Meowth are finally let's go. And James is like, oh, but I wanted my nachos. Because, he was ready to go earlier, but then they weren't. So he ordered nachos, and then they all decide to leave.
Poor James.
So then they arrive in their balloon. They put a net over Dragonite, and they say their motto, and clear their throat in annoyance in the middle of the motto when they get interrupted by Ash declaring who is there. Because he's like, it's Team Rocket, while they're still saying their motto. And Jesse's like, And then, when they continue their motto, Drake interrupts them toward the end of it, so they still don't get to finish. And he gets after them for interrupting the match. So then Drake has Dragonite fly up and pop right through their balloon. And they go flying off. And James says, now I'll never get those nachos. We're blasting off again! Ding! And then Tracy starts to say, I almost feel sorry for them. Yeah, almost. But not quite, is what Misty says. Alright, then back to the battle. And Tauros is in the match. Ash has Tauros just stand still and let Dragonite hit him, which makes everyone think he's making a ridiculous decision. But Ash was counting on the sand to act as a cushion, and it works. Because I think when Dragonite hits him, he comes from the sky. He comes charging down. So Ash is using the terrain to his advantage.
Yep.
He's learning. And that allows Tauros to do some damage to Dragonite before Tauros is eventually taken down. Then it is declared that Drake has now taken 3 of Ash's Pokemon down in a row. So it is 1 versus 1. Pikachu versus Dragonite. Pikachu dodges a Hyper Beam by springing off its tail, and he lands on Dragonite's head, where Pikachu rides it like a bull. Then Pikachu uses Thunder, which is how I had often defeated Lance's Dragonite with my Jolteon. I used the Thunder move, despite the fact that it is actually not very effective against the dragon.
That's funny.
And finally, Dragonite collapses, and Ash wins! Now Ash has a trophy. He's the first one to defeat Drake, and he gets to be in the Hall of Fame. And we get a look of the cement slab with the footprints and see his picture with his Pokemon. Which actually reminds me very much of how the Hall of Fame thing works in Red and Blue and Yellow. Yeah. Remember, when we beat it, it shows those things, and then you can go back to the computer and see all the things that you've won with the Hall of Fame before. So that was cool. In fact, this whole Orange League worked very much like the end of Red and Blue and Yellow. Mm-hmm. You had 4 gyms, so, you know, the Elite 4, and then the champion.
Yeah.
And then you have the Hall of Fame. So it was almost like they were remedying what they did with the Indigo League. It's like, oh, yeah, Elite 4 and champions and stuff. We'll just create a whole different league and do it that way. Yeah. Which was kind of fun. I liked it. But we still have actually 4 more episodes for the Orange Islands before we're done. So even though he's won, we have like a little epilogue of 4 episodes that we will cover next week. And there's actually some cool stuff that happens there. There's a couple fillers, but then by the end there's some cool elements, I thought. But yeah, that wraps up our anime episodes for this week. And so now it is time for Pokemon cards!
Woohoo!
And this week, we will both be opening some from the newer set, Scarlet and Violet Twilight Masquerade.
This one smelled better than other times for some reason.
Yeah, it really smelled really good for me, too.
It just smells really good today. On my pack, I have 2 Drampa and a Dragapult.
I think it's just Dragapult.
Dragapult. And the Dragapult is terrestrialized into a water type. It's I think it's terrestrialized into a dragon type. Which I think it is a dragon type.
I think you're right. I could be wrong, though. I don't know enough about Drampa. Sorry.
That's fine. All right. Should I start?
Yeah, maybe I'll list mine, too. Mine is, I don't remember what it's called. It's Ogre something. It's the thing. It's the new Pokemon from that DLC that this is all coming from, I think. So, man, it looks terrestrialized-y too, but that's all I can tell you.
Let me see.
Or it's just wearing a mask. Maybe it's not even terrestrialized. I don't know.
Okay. My first Pokemon is Whirlipede. Evolves from Venipede, and it is a dark type.
Oh, cool.
This Pokemon spins itself rapidly and charges into its opponents. Its top speed is just over 60 miles per hour. Then I got Crawdunt, evolves from Corphish, water type. A rough customer that wildly flails its giant claws. It is said to be extremely hard to raise. Farfetch'd, normal type. Ability, Impromptu Carrier. When you play this card from your hand onto your bench during your turn, you may search your deck for a Pokemon tool card and attach it to this Pokemon, then shuffle your deck. The stock this Pokemon carries in its wings serves as a sword to cut down opponents in a dire situation. The stock can also serve as food. Huh, interesting. Torkoal, fire type. Looks like a little turtle or tortoise. Coal is the source of Torkoal's energy. Large amounts of coal can be found in the mountains where they live. Sand Slash evolves from Sand Shrew, fighting type. The spikes on its body are made up of its hardened hide. It rolls up and attacks foes with its spikes. Iron Bundle. It's that like Santa bird water type, but it's a futuristic-y one.
That's like the what?
That's Santa bird. The one that always has a sack over its shoulder or whatever. I call it a Santa bird.
Oh, Santa bird. Deli bird?
It might be a deli bird. Its name is Iron Bundle in this because it's a future pump.
Sure.
It resembles a mysterious object mentioned in an old book. There are only two reported sightings of this Pokemon. I think I've got one a lot like this, just different picture. But I have a future Iron Bundle.
Cool.
Trainer, supporter card, Lucian. Each player shuffles their hand and puts it on the bottom of their deck. If either player puts any cards on the bottom of their deck in this way, each player flips a coin. If heads, that player draws 6 cards. If tails, they draw 3 cards. Iridos evolves from Spinarak, grass type.
Hmm.
It's my reverse holo and it's like really versatile. It has an ability, Big Net. Your opponent's active evolution Pokemon retreat cost is 1 more.
Ooh, that is pretty.
It wanders in search of food after darkness falls, never nesting in a specific place. And then I got an Aran, steel type. It is also kind of pretty reversal. I like the other one. It eats iron ore and sometimes railroad tracks to build up the steel armor that protects its body. Then Fezzanite.
What?
Fezzendipity.
Never heard of it.
Fezzendipity, psychic type. Looks like a birdish thing. I don't know.
Like a kinda pheasant?
Kind of looks like a mix of a Galarian Moltres with a little bit of Galarian Articuno.
Hmm.
Has an ability, Adrena Feroma. Ferom. If this Pokemon has any dark type energy attached and is damaged by an attack, flip a coin. If heads, prevent that damage.
Cool.
And it's got like a pretty edge. It's my rare. Fezzendipity? Fezzendipity. You know that one.
Fezzendipity.
Fezzendipity beats its glossy wings to scatter pheromones that captivate people and Pokemon. Water type, and that's all.
Water type energy, you mean?
Yep.
All right. I have Torkoal, fire type. I don't have to read my Torkoal because you already had it. Kadabra, psychic type. Using its psychic power, Kadabra levitates as it sleeps. It uses its springy tail as a pillow. Haluka, fighting type. It's that kind of owl bird thing. Huh. I don't know.
Oh, that weird.
Or maybe it's Halucha because it's got like the coloring on it makes it look like it's wearing like a wrestling mask.
Mm-hmm.
Halucha live quietly without flocking together. They fight constantly with their natural enemies, noisy groups of primate. Tangrowth evolves from Tangela. Ability, Thicket Body. This Pokemon takes 30 less damage from attacks. Tangrowth has 2 arms that it can extend as it pleases. Recent research has shown that these arms are, in fact, bundles of vines. Supporter Trainer, Carmine. If you go first, you may use this card during your first turn. Discard your hand and draw 5 cards. Swanna evolves from Ducklet.
I have a Japanese Ducklet.
Ooh, it has an ability that, like, it's not like a ton of damage necessarily, but if your opponent's active Pokemon is a Pokemon EX or Pokemon V, this attack does 90 more damage. So it does 20 damage, but it does 90 more if they're those special Pokemon.
Like, just an ability does 20 damage?
It's one energy ability, does 20 damage.
Oh, so it's not actually an ability.
Right, but yeah, it's a move, sorry. Whatever.
Okay.
It's said that many artists have taken inspiration from the sight of a Swanna performing a beautiful dance in the light of dawn. Ooh, Belly Bolt evolves from Tadbulb, electric type. Oh, Swanna was normal type. I don't know if I said that.
Oh, Swanna was normal type?
Yeah, you would think water, right?
Yeah, I have a Swanna that's water and a Ducklet Japanese that's water.
What appears to be eyeballs are actually organs for discharging the electricity generated by Belly Bolt's belly button dynamo. Have you looked at Belly Bolt closely and realized where the eyes actually are?
No. Or is that eyes, like...
Right above its mouth.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like a little smiley face drawn on it.
Huh. That's...
Right? Ooh. Scolipede evolves from Whirlipede.
Wait, I got Whirlipede.
I know. That's why I mentioned it. Dark type. Scolipede latches onto its prey with the claws on its neck before slamming them into the ground and jabbing them with its claws' toxic spikes. We got Floette, evolves from Flabébé, psychic type. The Pokemon uses red wavelengths of light to pour its own energy into flowers and draw forth their latent potential. Ooh, well, now I remember the name of the picture on my pack. It's Ogrepan. Because I just got Teal Mask Ogrepan, grass type. This mischief-loving Pokemon is full of curiosity. It battles by drawing out the type-based energy contained within its masks.
Can I see it?
And then I got a fighting type energy.
That's kind of cool.
And that is it for our episode this week. We have one more week to go to wrap up the Orange Islands and the Yellow Pokedex and Yellow's journey in the manga. And then we will be taking a month or two break as Ruby and I start to get things prepared for our journey through Johto. So be prepared for a little summer break from this. And if you're not quite caught up, this will give you time to catch up, I guess. Routes Through Pokemon is a Hunter Field Institute production. We are on YouTube, usually. Spotify, Amazon, Apple, and various places. You can like, subscribe, rate, review, do all those things. Get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you. We also have a Facebook group called Routes Through Pokemon, and I am on X or Twitter under Hunterfield Inns, INS. And we also have an email where you can reach out with any questions, comments, concerns, things that you feel we've missed or you want us to bring up, or any things you want to talk about the episodes that we'll be diving into later or chapters. Feel free to bring those up at hunterfieldmanor@gmail.com. So we'd love to hear from you, and we will catch you on the next route. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Part 12. Chaotic Collisions. A spindly little plant with a yellow, bell-shaped head sprung along its roots down a long tunnel in the caves of Mount Moon, its eyes wide in panic.
Come back here!
Rushing after the Pokemon was a girl with dark pink hair shouting after it. At the edge of a cliff, Violet was staring at a twitching Pokeball, her horsey, Mizu, nearby. Sweat beaded on her forehead, and she anxiously hoped for the click of the Pokeball to tell her that the creature inside would stay. The voice coming from the tunnel did not penetrate her concentration. The Pokeball twitched. It twitched again.
Come on! Come on!
And again. And... click! Violet froze. It took about a second and a half for everything to kick into gear. Her eyes flashed wide, and she leapt into the air, shouting,
I caught it! I caught it!
Just then, the frightened little plant skidded to a halt, sliding right into Violet's Pokeball and sending it flying right over the cliff. She opened her mouth to cry out, but just then the girl with the pink hair crashed into Violet and almost knocked her off the cliff. Pink hair didn't notice at all as her sights were set solely on the Pokemon.
Gotcha!
She snatched up the Bellsprout while Violet whirled her arms like propellers, trying to keep from tipping over backwards. As she lost the battle of balance, she began to scream, but Pink Hair reached out and yanked her back quickly.
Are you okay?
Pink Hair asked. Violet had to take a couple of seconds to catch her breath and let her mind catch up with the chaotic events that had just ensued. Her eyes noticed the Bellsprout that had been running scared was now in the clutches of the girl who had nearly knocked her off a cliff. She also remembered how the Bellsprout had knocked her newly captured Pokemon off the cliff in an attempt to escape Pink Hair. Violet frowned, pushed herself up on her feet and away from the newcomer.
I'm fine, no thanks to you.
Violet spat.
Hey, I just saved your life.
Violet blinked hard and gestured wildly at the cliff.
You were the one who almost killed me.
Pink Hair looked over at the cliff sheepishly.
Oh, well, yeah.
Then she quickly perked up and also got to her feet.
But actually, it was this one's fault if he hadn't run away from me.
She held out the Bellsprout and shook him in front of Violet. The poor Pokemon flopped around like a rag doll. Violet glared.
And why was that Pokemon running away, huh?
Violet started to reach for a Pokeball to toss, not realizing that her only available Pokemon was still outside the ball after the battle.
It looked pretty scared.
When her hand closed around air, Violet blinked and looked around the cliff for Mizu, who wasn't there.
Of course, Leafage was scared. He was being disobedient.
When the girl realized Violet wasn't paying attention to her anymore, she cocked her head sideways.
What are you doing?
Mizu? Mizu!
Violet turned in circles, glancing all around.
I'm looking for my horse.
Suddenly, she stopped and slowly turned a very dangerous-looking glare at Pink Hair.
You.
You took him! Are you a Pokemon thief? Are you with that Rocket Gang?
What? I did not.
You probably were trying to steal my other Pokemon too, weren't you?
I'm not a thief.
Bending her knees and spreading her feet apart, Violet was ready to take on the pink-haired girl.
Uh-huh. You better tell me where Mizu is, or...
Suddenly, there was a buzzing sound behind Violet, and something large knocked into the back of her shoulder. As it continued its path, it turned around and hovered beside Pink Hair. The red and black creature looked like some kind of bug-type Pokemon, but not one Violet had ever recalled seeing or reading about. Then, before she could recover, another critter scurried between her legs, releasing a sudden spurt of fire that singed Violet's pant leg.
Ouch!
Look, I didn't want to come over here anyway. It was his idea, and now that I have him back, we'll be leaving.
No, I'm not letting you leave until you give me back my Pokemon.
Violet winced as she tried to move to block Pink Hair from leaving. Her legs still smarted where that other odd Pokemon had burned her. The pink-haired girl looked down at Violet's leg, and then at the girl's eyes.
You might want to put that out.
Put what out?
Violet asked as she looked down at her own leg. It turned out she hadn't been burned, but was burning in that moment. The Pokemon had lit her pant leg on fire. Violet jumped in shock and then fell backward into the tunnel and started patting at her leg violently to put out the flames. The pink-haired girl strolled on by, annoyed she had been accused of stealing Pokemon. She wrinkled her nose as she caught the scent of the burning leg.
Smell you later.
Growling, Violet worked harder to stop the fire. When it was out, she rolled up onto her hands and knees, staring down the tunnel. Pink Hair was already out of sight, but she couldn't be far. Violet shot up onto her feet and was about to run when pain shot through her body from the burn on her leg. It took her back down to one knee, and she clenched her teeth in fury. She opened her mouth and started to scream in anger when there was a loud crack! Violet blinked and looked all around.
What was that?
There was more sounds of crumbling rock and... was that a rush of water? Being a little more cautious of her leg, Violet hurried as fast as she could back to the edge of the cliff. She peered over and her jaw dropped in shock. That underground lake, where her father and his Pokemon had been, had turned into a large whirlpool as the water level dropped. It was draining somehow, and caught somewhere inside was Midori. To be continued.